This process will be quick. It will be efficient. It's designed to deal with those last few holdouts, and it will be controlled.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, those last few holdouts are not giving up easily. The Supreme Court yesterday issued a stay on the deal thanks to protests by Indiana-based debt holders. And joining us in the studio to look at how the court is going to proceed, if it's going to force Chrysler to fold, essentially, is Michael De La Merced, business reporter with our partner, The New York Times. How you doing?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
Really, I want to know, first of all, these Indiana-based debt holders, what do they represent and what do they really want?
Well, they represent three Indiana state funds, including pension funds for teachers and police officers. And what they want, essentially, is more compensation. They're supposed to get 29 cents on the dollar, which is what the government has agreed to pay these so-called secured lenders. Now, normally in law, they're supposed to come first, but the government argues there's just not a whole lot of value there. So
right.
They're going to pay them 29 cents on the dollar, and they've argued that, well, they deserve more.
And what does this stay mean? You know, President Obama was saying that this deal to merge Chrysler with Fiat was going to be, quote, quick and efficient. This doesn't seem like it's going quickly. How far can the Supreme Court go in really slowing this down?
Well, the thing is, a lot of people aren't quite sure how to read this. It could either be, you know, a delay of a day just so they can go through all of the briefings, which were filed beginning at about midnight on Sunday. Or they could agree to hear the case, in which case the proceedings could take weeks or months, and that could pose serious problems for the government's plan.
I mean, on one matter, it does appear that there is a fairly tortured chain of logic here to declare Chrysler a bank so it can receive TARP funds. The bondholders, it seems to me, either have an argument that, A, Chrysler is not a bank, or if it is, then we need to get some of these funds.
Something like that. Throughout the trial, which I've been covering, the government has actually argued that Chrysler isn't exactly a bank, but basically the government has the latitude to give money to companies it deems important. And so they dispensed with the money, and the Indiana funds basically said, we deserve more. We're sort of being shortchanged here.
Well, the Fiat deal is committed until June 15th, and we're at June 9th. Is Fiat going to wait if this drags out past the 15th?
Well, so far, Fiat's CEO has said that they remain committed. I think he said that they would never walk away, but they certainly won't walk away till June 15th. After that, who knows?
After that, they'll get a cheaper price, so why not stay with it? Does the court care about this deadline at all? I mean, are they concerned? Do they have to pay attention to it?
They have to be aware of it, and so no one thinks that they're going to let this drag on for too long, and we should expect to hear from them fairly soon.
All right, let's put a little bit more of a frame around here. There's 38,000 Chrysler employees who could lose their jobs. 23 manufacturing facilities and 20 parts depots could be shuttered. And then, of course, the dealers, 3,000 dealers, could suffer basically closure or significant harm. A lot of people who are in some of these hard-hit states that are heavy on auto manufacturing are saying that they just haven't gotten enough from the government, that the government has been too tough on the car companies. And yet you also have these investors who represent lots of people saying that they need their money. Is there really an opposition in terms of what different Americans need from the deal, whether it's people with their 401k money or people who live in towns that need industry? Is there sort of a clash of interest here?
Sort of. I think what the government has said is that they really just want to preserve Chrysler as a viable company. And what these funds are doing is they're saying, well, what the government's plan is too fast. It shortchanges too many creditors, so let's hold up. But that, the government says, and Chrysler says, is dangerous. Chrysler says that it's losing $100 million a day every day that it's in bankruptcy, and so they need to get this done as soon as possible.
This whole deal looks suspiciously like a liquidation, regardless of whether the June 15th deadline passes, but that's just my view. That's not necessarily your view. I'm wondering if the bondholders who are cast here continually from the White House as speculators or as greedy investors are in fact making a legitimate issue that the government has exceeded its authority in declaring Chrysler a bank. Shouldn't Congress actually be the one that takes the lead here, and is that what the Supreme Court is taking a look at?
Well, the Supreme Court is really only supposed to take a look at legal issues, and the whole idea of the government sort of giving this financial bailout money to Chrysler, a lot of people don't actually see as something the Supreme Court could be ruling on or should be ruling on. That was something for Congress to decide, and no one really objected when the government gave Chrysler its money.
Who thinks the Supreme Court is exceeding its authority? Is that Chrysler people? Is that the White House? Who is that?
They would prefer that the Supreme Court just let this go.
I bet they would, yeah.
But at this point, they're taking the view that this is just a temporary road bump, a small road bump, and they're just going to let it through.
There is some precedent for dealing with an issue like this. The funds, the Indiana funds, compared this with Youngstown Sheet and Tube versus Sawyer. It was a 1952 decision, rejecting President Harry S. Truman's assertion that he had the authority to seize steel mills during the Korean War. The broader context of this is really how much of a hand the government should have in industry, whether it's the banking industry or the auto industry. Is there any sense that the Supreme Court, by looking at this case and how these stakeholders are treated, is also looking at the limits of government intervention?
I think that's definitely something the government would look at if they do agree to hear the case. There have been many questions of how the government has comported itself during the whole bailout of banks, of automakers, et cetera. And if the Supreme Court were ever to take time to examine the issue, it could very well be this one.
Well, and this could conceivably be just the beginning of the challenges of this entire exercise of the TARP, but that will have to wait. The question now is, if the Supreme Court doesn't rule, does it bounce it back to the lower courts, or does the clock just continue to tick?
If the Supreme Court doesn't rule, if it decides not to pick up the case, then the deal would probably go forward, and that would be that.
If the Supreme Court does pick up the case, can they freeze the parties in some sort of state where, all right, we're going to decide this, and then you can proceed with your deal? Or can fiat actually scuttle the whole thing, in a sense, be the final court of appeal on this whole deal?
That's actually a pretty good way of looking at it. Fiat, even if the Supreme Court decides to hear the case, past June 15, fiat can walk away, and then everything is moot.
So the supreme law of the land in this case is actually a contract, a business contract. It's not the Constitution.
It is. The contract is the main issue here. And so it is up to fiat after June 15. If they decide to walk away, then the whole case is moot.
You've, in writing about this, cited John Dingell of Michigan, a congressman, who said that basically, the pension funds, and I'm quoting him here, the pension funds will create a great catastrophe. What is Congress or are members of Congress, particularly in the affected states, how are they weighing in or reacting to something like this?
Well, the Michigan lawmakers are quite expectedly saying that the deal should go through, that Supreme Court should just let the deal proceed and have a go forward. But you do have other lawmakers who have questioned whether or not this deal should go forward.
I guess this is an epic battle if you look really, take the long view of American history, that this is a really an epic battle between the rights of property owners or investors and the rights of workers. Do you see this constitutional stay and a potential challenge to this whole deal as a continuation of the battle between what investors are supposed to get versus what workers are supposed to get?
In some ways, that's what this is shaping up to be. That's certainly what the Indiana pensioners are arguing. Now, in court, there have been many arguments sort of against this, loan documents, all sorts of details. So there are multiple sides to this story.
Michael, what question are you asking yourself as someone who's covering this as a business reporter? What question are you asking yourself, not just about this case, but about what's unfolding with the auto industry in America?
Really, the fundamental question is, the government is taking all of these extraordinary steps, but are they enough? Is this going to be enough to preserve Chrysler? Is this going to be enough to save GM? And we really won't know that for some time.
Chrysler equals fiat. That's the answer, I think.
Yeah, it's a deep situation, and I look forward to more of your reporting as we move ahead. And that's Michael de la Merced, business reporter with our partner, The New York Times. Thank you so much, Michael.
Thank you.